Welcome to my podcast, Patient First. I'm Dr. Naveen Somaya. I'm an Australian registered specialist plastic surgeon with 17 years of surgical experience. As the scientific convener of the Non-Surgical Symposium and a former president of the Australasian Society of Aesthetic Plastic Surgeons, my goal is to help patients navigate the complex world of both surgical and non-surgical aesthetics, but by understanding what is evidence and what is not. This, I hope, is going to help them realize their aesthetic goals safely and in a manner consistent with good clinical practice. This podcast is an extension of that legacy. My aim is to empower you to make the most educated decisions about your choices concerning your face and body aesthetics and your safety. Each episode, I will be bringing to you cutting-edge science and exploring surgical procedures in a modern, evidence-based approach to aesthetics. Plus, I will be inviting some esteemed guests in my podcast in the future to offer new perspectives. Tune in each week as together we explore the next frontier of surgical and non-surgical aesthetics. Welcome back to the podcast, Patient First. I'm your host, Dr. Naveen Somaya. I'm an Australian registered specialist plastic surgeon, and I specialize in evidence-based plastic surgical care. In this episode, we will talk about the rich legacy of plastic surgery and the rich legacy of the healing that plastic surgery has provided throughout the centuries. Now, I would like you to take home that plastic surgery is more than aesthetics. Plastic surgery has always been painted in a poor light, in a frivolous manner, as it is unnecessary surgery, something that could be accomplished in a lunchtime, something that has perfectly no downtime, has no recovery, and you end up with the perfect result. This is marketing. This is not reality. So we would like you to understand the remarkable origins of plastic surgery, and this is still invasive surgery with real risks and real complications. With that background, let's talk about the disclaimers. In the intent of full disclosure, as mandated by the Australian health regulators, my name is Dr. Naveen Somaya. I'm a registered medical practitioner and a specialist plastic surgeon. My area of registration is surgery, and my area of specialty practice is plastic surgery. My APRA registration number is MED00118989. I wish to advise listeners that information provided in this podcast is general in nature and does not constitute formal medical advice. All surgery carries risks, and you are recommended to seek a second opinion from a suitably qualified practitioner. Individual results do vary from person to person, and this is something that you have to factor in before embarking on surgery. With that background, let's delve right into the podcast. Plastic surgery is a discipline of surgery that has been in practice for thousands of years. It has a rich history of healing and a rich legacy of making changes to patients to help them. Now, every time anywhere in the world a plastic surgeon performs an operation to restore or rebuild something that has been damaged due to cancer, accidents, trauma, or a birth defect, or whether the patient goes through a cosmetic enhancement procedure, the words of Tagliacozzi ring through every single time. And before I tell you who Tagliacozzi is, I will tell you what his famous quote was. The famous quote of Tagliacozzi was, "Restore, rebuild, and make whole those parts that nature has given, but which fortune has taken away. Not so much that it might delight the eye, but it might buoy the spirit and help the mind of the afflicted." Now, this was done in 1597, when Gaspare Tagliacozzi was an Italian plastic surgeon who is considered as the father of plastic and reconstructive surgery in Italy, pioneered a method of reconstructing a nose using a flap technique that was known as a Tagliacozzi flap. He then wrote a textbook to describe this methodology along with illustrations, and basically goes back to the origin of why was nose reconstruction such a big thing in Italy in the 15th century. Now, nose reconstruction was necessary because people lost the noses as a part of dueling with a sword called the rapier sword. And a rapier sword is, for those of you who watched Shrek 2, it's the Puss in Boots is the one that handles that sword, which is a double-edged sharp sword with a blade of about 100 centimeters, and it can cut both ways and cuts very sharp and cuts very well. So if dueling was a favorite pastime, you would expect a certain amount of collateral damage, and unfortunately, sometimes noses came in the way. And it's a bit like when you have fast motor cars with no seatbelts, you're bound to have some predictable injuries. And this is kind of the analogy of 15th century Europe. So as a consequence of that, lots of noses were off and lots of noses had to be reconstructed. Now, the technique of nose reconstruction reached Italy, but it's important to understand where it originated from. Now, the technique of reconstructing noses originated in ancient India, but thousands of years ago. And along the 8th century, it went over to Mesopotamia or present-day Iraq, and then from there found its way to Europe. And during that time, the types of injuries resulting in nose amputations were usually warlike, traumatic sword fights, amputation punishments, so on and so forth. Now, this book written by the Indian surgeon Sushruta, in this book called Sushruta Samhita, is still a very classic text because it is extensively described. And as I mentioned to my listeners in the previous podcast, this operation of reconstructing the nose using a flap of forehead skin is still used today to reconstruct defects caused by cancer of the nose or caused by traumatic injuries of the nose. It is still a robust procedure that has actually stood the test of time, telling people that the healing of plastic surgery has been prevalent throughout the centuries. So in my lifetime practicing as a plastic surgeon, I'm acutely aware of the incredible techniques and skill that plastic surgery possesses that can help individuals in the same manner it has helped individuals for thousands of years. Now, while you're training in plastic surgery, you have to train in all aspects of plastic surgical techniques. It is reconstructive surgery, including burns, including hand surgery, traumatic reconstruction, falling accidents, cancer reconstruction of the face, of the head, of the neck, of the breast, of the body. You also have to train in cosmetic surgery as it pertains to the face, eyelids, nose, breast, and body. These techniques, along with participating in operations in different age groups, children, young adults, adults, and older people, gives you a skill set when you're finally credentialed as a plastic surgeon that allows you to provide a very high quality plastic surgery within the framework of patient safety. Cosmetic surgery training is part and parcel of plastic surgical training. And as I mentioned to my listeners in my previous podcast, cosmetic plastic surgery for cosmetic reasons and reconstructive plastic surgery for reconstructive reasons employ the same techniques based on manipulation of the anatomy that plastic surgeons are very skilled at. And these are two sides of the same coin. I'm privileged to be part of a kids hospital multidisciplinary clinic where we treat children who are born with vascular birthmarks, either abnormal blood vessels such as arteries, veins, arteries and veins, and lymphatics. Now, the AVM, is also called as an arteriovenous malformation, is an abnormal structure of the arteries and veins when they're joined together in an abnormal way. So the best analogy I can give you is like, look, if you look at spaghetti in a packet, they're all lying parallel next to each other. And that is how arteries and veins go parallel to each other normally. Now, when you take that spaghetti from the packet and put it into a bowl of boiling water, it becomes a big bundle of spaghetti coiled and clustered. And that is exactly what an AVM looks like. Now, the kicker is the AVMs are not static. In other words, they continue to grow little by little by little by little. They start small, but they eventually get quite big. And the longer you leave it, the bigger the problem to fix. But more importantly, it can have a lot of issues such as blood circulation issues and a consequence of that excessive amount of blood circulation going through the AVM. So it is best practice to diagnose early, identify early, and appropriately treat them. Now, sadly, AVMs can occur in any part of the body, and I happen to treat when they end up in the face. Structures such as the eyelid, the temple, the nose, the lip, the cheek, the neck. And these are important areas because not just your form, but also your function on a daily basis it relies on these anatomical structures to be normal and intact. So trying to treat them is a multidisciplinary approach using extensive amount of imaging to diagnose it. And once you've diagnosed it, with the help of my interventional radiology colleagues, we do minimal access blocking of the AVM. In other words, inject something into that cluster of blood vessels to block. And once the blood flow is blocked, you can remove the whole pathology as one single block. Now, this is important to remove the entire thing. Otherwise, it can run the risk of coming back again, in other words, a recurrence. So the impact of this is very simply, there's a medical component to this, because if you don't treat it in time, it will get bigger and get worse and complicate matters. If you treat it in time, the aesthetic benefit is actually quite significant, because if you can imagine where these lesions are located, these are pulsatile, in other words, pumping lesions that are growing. If they're on the nose, it is not. If it's on the eye, it is worse. If it's on the lip, it is difficult for patients to eat and talk and sleep and do everything else. If it is somewhere close to the ear, the patient is burdened with a buzzing sound every single heartbeat. So these are things that cannot be allowed to continue forever. But this is where treating a medical condition has significant aesthetic benefits, because you're not only restoring normalcy to the body tissue, but you're also helping someone live their life. Eyelid surgery is one of the surgeries that I do a lot of. I've had a special interest in eyelids, having done my PhD in eyelid reanimation and subsequently training formally in the United States in oculoplastic surgery or eyelid surgery. So it's natural that I treat a wide spectrum of eyelids, starting from young children, traumatic injuries, cancer injuries, as well as aging-related injuries. Now, eyelid surgery is frequently listed as a purely vanity procedure or purely cosmetic procedure, but this is not supported by the evidence. Eyelid aging and the features of eyelid aging do impact your activities of daily living and do impact your safety, because it interferes with your field of peripheral vision. Now, when I talk to patients over time, I've learned, you ask them what bothers them the most, each patient will have one or two things that annoy them the most. In some patients, it will be the forehead fatigue or the tightness on the forehead at the end of a day, staring at a computer screen, headaches, unable to read when the light is not bright. In other words, a classic be a restaurant menu, you'll have to pull out your torch. And if you ever wondered why the Apple iPhone has a torch, it is to facilitate visual progress in situations where the light is dim. Other patients have difficulty driving at night. They find the concept of driving at night very hard. And depending on the severity of the eyelid problem, you may not necessarily be able to notice people in your blind spot while you're driving. And because these changes occur very gradually, they creep on you. And somehow you feel that this is a part of the aging process. My eyesight is not as good as it was. So when you go to the optometrist to have a check of the vision, they look at your vision and say, there's nothing wrong with your vision, but then you cannot explain or correlate what experience you're having to a normal report of the optometrist. So the eyelid tends to get weaker and tends to come down with age, little by little by little. And what we're seeing with modern life is, because all of us spend an additional 8 hours on front of a screen every single day compared to what we did about 25 or 30 years ago, the demand on your upper eyelid is significantly larger. So you're beginning to see changes at a much younger age than, say, 25, 30 years ago. And this weakness, although it may not be very apparent, is actually impacting not just your productivity because of all the symptoms that come with it. It also, in an older patient, patients over the age of 65 or 70, it tends to impact the safety as well, because common scenarios where you cannot really decipher the depth of vision, especially when it is dim or dark, is the classic case of going backyard down a couple of steps. You're unable to perceive the depth of the steps when you have your peripheral field restricted and your eyelids are a bit droopy. So this is kind of something that is not really front and center when it comes to seeking eyelid surgery for medical reasons. And everyone assumes eyelids are always about cosmetic reasons. The good thing is you have to restore a normal anatomy to allow a normal function, which in turn restores normal aesthetics. Yes, you get a better looking eyelid by restoring the anatomy to its normalcy. Now, these techniques are standard plastic surgical techniques that we use to create a treated droopy eyelid, also called eyelid ptosis, remove the excessive skin, sometimes in combination with droopy eyelid correction. Sometimes, depending on how much of the brow is coming down and impacting on the eyelid, a brow procedure may be necessary. So these are all things that have come from the rich legacy of plastic surgical research, plastic surgical literature that is applicable to treat a skin cancer reconstruction of the eyelid, as well as an aging change or a droopy eyelid that is impacting your function and your vision. And yes, also used for cosmetic eyelid surgery. But the impact is better functioning eyelid, a better looking eyelid, and naturally a more aesthetic look to of the upper face. Over the last 13 years, I've been treating a disease called lipedema. This is what is called as a forgotten disease that nobody knows about, and people who know about are very few and far between. Unfortunately, it affects women and women only. Unfortunately, the incidence is about 10 to 15% of the population has lipedema. It is present across cultures. You've seen every single ethnic group that has lipedema. And what it is a genetic disease that influences your connective tissue and fat so that you produce abnormal fat in large amounts and store them. And classically, they affect your thigh, it can affect your legs and your arms, and in some cases, other body parts. It runs in families. The gene is passed on through generations. Men are carriers, women manifest the disease, unfortunately. And the treatment, what we have seen, was to do nothing in the beginning. And then it became conservative treatment only, including the use of compression stockings and massage therapies and MLD and other mechanical ways of keeping fluid down. And over the years, we've noticed that with improved technology coming into the foray, with new techniques of liposuction coming, liposuction is now beginning to provide a surgical solution for extracting the pathological, abnormal, unhealthy lipedema fat. So the treatment of these lipedema patients includes a combination of non-surgical interventions and liposuction surgery. Now, the reason this is important is it will continue to get worse with time. It responds to the four hormonal surges or hormone changes that you see in a woman's life, namely puberty, pregnancy, menopause, and the hormone changes that accompanies getting old post-menopause. And these influence fat metabolism, influence your metabolic health, and as a consequence, it impacts the amount of fat that you store. If you coincidentally happen to be a heavier weight person, in other words, BMI of more than 25, that also will impact lipedema growth and it will promote more lipedema growth. So the metabolic health component needs to be addressed by non-surgical means. You need to address the swelling and the fluid management and the lymphatic movement by non-surgical means, mainly either mechanical manipulation, manual manipulation, good diet, good exercise, perfect nutrition, and metabolic health interventions through specialist multidisciplinary care. And then when you're ready, liposuction to debulk the fat is essential because that's the only way that we can reduce the fat. And that will improve the feeling of heaviness of your legs, has been shown to decrease your pain because normally patients with lipedema do have pain, and helps you to be bit more mobile, bit more active, that ultimately translates to better wellness, better health, and a better quality of life. So this is something that we have been treating lots of patients with, and this is an indication where liposuction, although it is used as a cosmetic intervention in other cases, in this case, it is used as a medical therapeutic intervention to treat and remove the fat that is actually very painful. And that has been extremely helpful. This is another example of the legacy of healing of plastic surgery, where you're using techniques that are applicable both at a reconstructive surgery level as well as a cosmetic surgery level. And we are privileged to be part of that journey. Continuing the legacy of healing of plastic surgery, I'd like to talk about the topic of loose skin or excessive skin as a consequence of massive weight loss or losing a lot of weight either following surgery or using weight loss drugs such as Ozempic or Mounjaro, which people are very familiar with now. So when you lose significant amount of weight through either method, medical weight loss, surgical weight loss, or traditional weight loss of diet and exercise, you can expect a certain amount of loose skin. The amount of loose skin that I have seen as a plastic surgeon following surgical weight loss is by far the worst, because it comes on very quickly, very sudden, and the skin tends to be excessive. Obviously, patients tend to lose a significant amount of weight in a short period of time. Loose skin is not just unsightly. Loose skin is heavy. Loose skin can cause medical problems such as discomfort, pain due to the dragging nature. Loose skin can actually cause a lot of moisture trapping in the folds that eventually lead to skin excoriation, skin wounds, potential infection, so on and so forth. So it is another reason how plastic surgical techniques to sculpt the excess skin of the leg or to excise the skin to restore a normal shaped leg or leg with no skin in between that prevents you from getting difficulties when you move your legs because the excess skin comes in the way. And as a consequence, you may have to compensate by altering your gait to facilitate that movement. These are practical problems that patients encounter. Plastic surgery can help by removing these skins, hopefully improving the quality of the life, improving mobility, and reducing the risk of infections and skin breakdowns. This is just another example of the rich legacy of healing by plastic surgery. It is very natural for patients who are considering plastic surgery for medical reasons to be concerned about the outcome and the aesthetic outcome of that intervention. Aesthetics is a very important part of everyday life, and it is an important part of everyone's life. And even when I was a child, when I used to go to have my haircut, I used to always be worried about what is my haircut going to look like after the haircut. And I was always concerned about the fact that the barber would be listening more to my dad than to my wishes. So this is a very ingrained in everyone from the very young age that the appearance does matter. And naturally, when you have a surgical operation that deals with their medical intent, such as a cancer reconstruction, it is very natural that we have to factor in as plastic surgeons that the patient's expectation of a good aesthetic outcome is normal, natural, and quite realistic. So when I see patients typically for eyelid skin cancers, where the intent of the treatment is to get rid of the cancer as well as provide a decent reconstruction, the expected outcome by the patient is nothing short of good aesthetics. So this is discussed. This is explicitly conveyed to the patient that, yes, we will try our very best to achieve not just cancer clearance, a good functional reconstruction to allow the eyelids to function and close, but also over time, you will not look like you've had a major operation with visible stigmata of surgery. Either it is a unsightly appearance or a visible scar or a position of the eyelid that is not normal. These are very important considerations we discuss. We tell patients this is important. And when I do the planning for the surgery, I draw the diagrams on the patient's photograph and anticipate these are the complications. A 40-year-old patient having eyelid reconstruction poses a set of challenges that is different to a 20-year-old patient with eyelid reconstruction, which is totally different to a 65-year-old patient who's having eyelid reconstruction for cancer surgery. These challenges are in front of me. I explicitly articulate them with the patient. Tell them these are the things that can occur and these are the things that I do to ensure that they don't happen. And this, we hope, is a very open, honest, collaborative, informative session that endears trust to the patient as well as gives them confidence that, yes, I'm confident my cancer can be treated, my function of the eyelid is not compromised, but more importantly, my looks are not going to be, and every single patient will have this concern. And as plastic surgeons, we have to address this at the time of the consultation. Talking about the marriage of medical needs and aesthetic outcomes, breast cancer reconstruction is a very important reconstructive procedure performed by specialist plastic surgeons, where it is not only important to address the reconstruction of the breast tissue that has been affected by cancer, it is also important to ensure that all the aesthetic elements that go with an aesthetic breast is addressed in the procedure or on subsequent procedures. And these are the couple of key elements of aesthetics in a breast reconstruction. Number one is the size that should match the other side. The shape should be identical. to the edge as well as the opposite breast. The nipple areolar complex should be reconstructed in a manner that is not just normal, aesthetic, but also identical with the other side. The scar should be minimal. The scar should not be that noticeable or visible. And the overall shape of the breast should be conducive to a normal breast appearance. So this is a place where you use the skills of reconstructive surgical techniques and aesthetic surgical techniques to marry them, blend them, to keep a patient in the driver's seat, and your practice becomes a patient-centric practice and you look after. Sometimes it takes two procedures. Sometimes it might take three or more procedures, but nevertheless, it may be staged. But the final outcome is something that the patient is going to be happy with. And you have done the best based on evidence-based plastic surgical techniques to continue the legacy of healing by plastic surgery. We've talked about the medical nature of plastic surgery and also its collateral benefits of improving aesthetics. And a specialist plastic surgeon will always take into account both aspects. Now, I tell patients that if you're looking forward to your destination, you need to be prepared for the journey. And this is in the context of the aftercare following the surgical procedure, because the narrative in the media, and hopefully and thankfully it is less and less now, is plastic surgery is an easy procedure. Plastic surgery does not have much downtime. Results are perfect. You can achieve everything in one operation. So these are things that are myths. They need to be clearly dissected, discussed at the consultation. Injury to the body at the time of surgery is no different to injury to the body at any other time. The only difference is surgery is a very controlled injury to tissues of the body that then respond with the healing based on how they have been doing for thousands of years. There's a time frame. There's a cascade of events. There's a sequence of new cells coming in, new growth factors coming in, all in a very coordinated response that has been perfected by the body for many years. Swelling follows surgery. Swelling doesn't go away very quickly. Sometimes it can take up to 6 to 12 weeks for the swelling to settle down. And in some body parts, it's more noticeable. So with all this evidence in front of us, my job as a surgeon is to tell, advise, and educate patients about how to be prepared to deal with this. And when I perform eyelid surgery, the first thing I tell patients is your vision will be blurry. And there's only a few things you can do with the blurred vision in the first week of surgery. You certainly cannot drive. You certainly cannot read. So if you're planning to read a big document or spend ages in front of a computer trying to read something or watch a movie, that may not happen. You rather spend time listening to stuff, because that's one way of having some input and entertainment. So these are practical things. The second thing is, how do you deal with the appearance? Are you prepared to see yourself in the mirror 2 days after? So we take them through step by step to say, this will happen day one. This will happen day two. You'll have swelling and bruising. Then it'll gradually settle down. Here are the things that you can do to prevent it. Here are the things that I can do to help. And this is what you need to do. You need to be patient. Please do not do A, B, and C that can make things worse. So this is a very important aspect. When I do the preoperative assessment, and especially when we focus on the psychological vulnerability assessment, if I find that the patient is not ready to go through the emotional aspects of the post-surgical care, then we would recommend additional specialist help and guidance for them to negotiate and maneuver them through the post-operative phase, because this is a very important part of accepting the reality of post-surgical looks, post-surgical discomfort, which will ultimately get you to the end, but the journey can be a bit bumpy at times. So at the consultation, this is exactly what I'm looking for. Are you ready? Are you well motivated? Do you have the support structure in place to ensure that your journey is going to be smooth so that you can reach your destination in the way you want it to be? And these are important aspects of a open, honest, transparent discussion at the preoperative level. And if I find that the patient is not ready yet, they're not ready for surgery. In this episode, we covered the rich history and the legacy of plastic surgery and healing through the ages. We touched upon the history of Sushruta in ancient India with the rhinoplasty technique, to Italy with Gaspare Tagliacozzi, who is now regarded as the father of modern plastic and reconstructive surgery, with his famous quote, "Plastic surgery is real surgery, and it is important it is done for the right reasons. No matter if it is done for reconstructive reasons or cosmetic reasons, the techniques are identical. You're best if you choose a credentialed surgeon who is well qualified with expertise in this area, who is also prepared to listen to you, is also prepared to educate you, prepare you for the journey as well as your destination. And as a patient, you need to be aware that there is no quick fix either in the journey or in the process. As evidence has pointed, plastic surgery offers both promise and has a responsibility. Whether it is reconstructive plastic surgery or cosmetic plastic surgery, your desires and your motivation should be yours and yours only and not external pressure. It is critical, important to find a credentialed plastic surgeon who can help you navigate this journey as well as help you reach your destination. This is all the more relevant in this day and age where social media is promoting information that may be accurate or may not be accurate. It is up to you as a consumer to take matter into your own hands. Do your research, do your research, do your research. Thank you for watching. Thank you for joining me for this episode of Patient First. I hope you found this podcast useful. Remember, I'm always listening. And if you have any questions you would like me to answer on the show or upcoming episodes, please connect with me via my clinic website. Thank you.